from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones. All of them covered very neatly by this program, Coast to Coast AM, or on this night, Ghost to Ghost AM. Now listen to me very clearly. We are going to be doing open lines for ghost stories. What I would prefer tonight is entity attack stories. People who have been actually attacked one way or the other by an entity. I would also prefer, if there's any way for you to make it to a regular phone, not a cell phone, that would be highly appreciated. However, in the first hour, we're actually about to do something that I think is going to make some sort of history. I don't think it's ever been done on commercial radio before. And it's kind of an extension of last night's program, in a way, with Brendan Cook and Barbara Macbeth. Now, they're into EVP, electronic voice phenomena, the voices of the dead. But they are, by far, not the first to have done that. In fact, it goes back to our earliest pioneers in audio history. It goes back to Tesla. It goes back to the inventor of the telephone. It goes back. And there are things you don't know that have happened. Now, last night, just sort of in passing, I think we hit the subject of, has there ever been an ongoing discussion, you know, a two-way discussion with the dead? And Brendan made reference to this tape, this Spiricom tape, or audio. Right, Brendan?
That's correct, Art.
And you, just so that we can get this straight, you obtained this from some sort of journalist in Croatia. Now, this journalist was going to do a story on you and Barb and the GIS, right? And in the... I don't know, exchange of material, he mentioned to you he had this tape and sent it to you. Is that correct?
That's correct. He had contacted us and asked if he would mind, or if we would mind him using some of our material and doing some background on our group to present kind of an in-depth analysis of EVP and the kind of research that's being done all over the world. And we just started, you know, chatting back and forth, and he had mentioned that he was also working with an Italian group, but aside from this Italian group, he had come across the Spiricom tapes. Now, for anybody who's been researching EVP for any amount of time, they are going to be aware of what Spiricom was. Spiricom was, it was almost an extension of what Thomas Edison at one time thought was possible, which was the device that could communicate with the dead and have two-way communication. And he sent us these tapes to let us listen to them and hear, you know, this Dr. George Meek, who was one of the founders of Spiricom, the kind of experiments that he had done and the results that he had got with this. And it's just amazing.
Now, George Meeks may or may not be alive. We really don't know for sure one way or the other, do we?
No, I found out he did pass away in the winter of 1999.
He did. All right. Well, I found his website, and I note, I did make it on. I'll be doggone. So we've got a link up to the website, and on the website, you know, I'm kind of a technical guy, so I went, they've got a listing of all the equipment they used, very sophisticated equipment for the time, as a matter of fact, in order to achieve the communications that they achieved, which, I mean, this is a startling tape. I sat down to watch it thinking, ah, and by the time I was done, I was going, oh, my God. Now, there's a section of the website. It's kind of an archive of that website. I'm not really sure. It looks like an archive of it, but they go to great lengths in here to say none of this material is copyrighted in any way, nor may anybody screw with it or whatever it is they say in here. But at any rate, they wanted it out for the entire world to hear. And why the whole world hasn't heard it until now, I don't know. But ladies and gentlemen, what you're about to hear are a group of experimenters led by... was it led by George?
It was led by George Meek and a man named William O'Neill. And actually, this research was done from 1980 to 1982.
Actually, and some of it back in the 70s, I think.
It did start in the 70s, but the actual machine was pretty much built and fully functioning in the 80s.
And there are schematics, pictorials, the whole business up there of the equipment used. By the way, this whole thing eventually, apparently, became a book, a very famous book called The Ghost of 29 Megahertz. It's based on experiments by John G. Fuller. And so what you're about to hear at first when you listen to it, the very first part of the recording, you're going to go, ah, what a bunch of baloney. It's very hard to hear, but stick with it. Trust me on this. After the little commercial break we do here, get a recorder if you can. Turn your radio up and pay strict attention to what you're about to hear, because I think it is, well, for Halloween, if this one doesn't stand the hair on the back of your head up, nothing will. What do you think, Brendan?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I've been into EVP for a long time, and even this one got me.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much for the history. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Brendan. And in a moment, we'll be back with what became the ghost of 29 megahertz. Stay right there. As I mentioned, I don't think this has ever been exposed, it says, to commercial radio previously. That was odd. That was really odd. At any rate, tonight it's going to be, and I'm going to have to do it in two parts. The first part, you're going to have a very difficult time hearing. Bear with me. The entire presentation is well worth the listen, if not the recording. Here we go.
Hello, I am George Meek, Director of Research for Metascience Foundation. I hope that by now you'll become familiar with the mind-expanding concepts presented in the Many Mansions chart, as well as those in the text and illustrations in the booklet, The Magic of Living Forever, and the pamphlet, A Photohistory of Man's Communication Systems. With that background, you can better comprehend the significance of the material you will be hearing in this recording. On it, I share with you information regarding one of the most exciting events that has occurred in the long history of man. Since the beginning of time, people in all parts of the globe have speculated as to whether or not death was the end. Thousands of years of such speculation, plus the admonition of religious leaders to believe in a life beyond the grave, still left nagging doubts in the minds of all but the most devout. We were told that life after death existed, but no one could ever pick up a telephone or a two-way radio and carry on an extended and meaningful conversation with even one. Of the perhaps 8 billion persons who have lived on Earth and then died. Well, the message of this tape is that the long silence has been broken. Lengthy, two-way, normal voice conversations with persons who have died are now a reality. They have taken place. They have been recorded. In order to report to you on this momentous development, I will divide the information into several blocks. First, I will talk about the history of attempts to use electronic instruments for communication with the worlds of spirit. Then I'll tell you about the first major breakthrough, followed by the second breakthrough. Then I'll talk about the status of the present research and its significance for all mankind. Lastly, we will consider plans for further research. So let's start with historical background of instrumental communication with those who have died. If you wish to comprehend the breakthrough to be reported later, it is really important for you to absorb the background information that I will give in the next several minutes. The story begins about 60 years ago. The idea of building a wireless or a telephone or a radio that would make it possible to talk to the dead is an idea that has been around that long. Three of the greatest geniuses and inventors of our age, men who helped harness electricity for the good of mankind and laid much of the foundation upon which our marvels of electronic communication have been based, spent the final years of their lives trying to develop devices for communicating with the world of spirits. These men were Edison, Marconi, and Tesla. They succeeded in much else, but all died without inventing such an instrument. The reason they failed is obvious, at least from today's vantage point. When Thomas Edison died in 1931, scientific knowledge about the nature of energy had advanced very little. The field of solid-state physics, for instance, had not yet been born. Following in the footsteps of those famous explorers are some pioneers whose names will not be as familiar to you. In 1956, two men in California, a photographer named Attila von Thalle and a writer named Raymond Bayless, began the era of what has become known as EVP, electronic voice phenomenon. They recorded on magnetic tape some paranormal voices, voices that should not, logically, have been there. Bayless reported their experiments in the Journal of the American Society of Psychic Research in the winter of 1959. The announcement made hardly a ripple. Not a single person contacted either the society or the researchers to inquire about their work. But across the Atlantic, things were about to heat up in the field of EVP research. In the summer of 1959, a Swedish film producer by the name of Friedrich Jurgensen came up with some extra voices on his recordings as he was trying to capture bird songs on the tape in the countryside. Amidst the bird songs, he heard a faint human voice, a male voice speaking Norwegian, saying something about bird voices of the night. Like anybody in that situation would, Jurgensen wondered if the voices weren't just stray radio signals. But the more he listened carefully to his tapes, the more voices he detected that could not be explained as radio transmissions. The voices included some personal messages, such as, "Friedrich, you are being watched." And, a few weeks later, he recorded what he recognized to be the voice of his mother, who had died 4 years earlier, saying in German, "Friedel, my little Friedel, can you hear me?" Jurgensen continued his experiments and published a book about them in 1964. In addition to using a tape recorder with a microphone, he experimented with making recordings from the radio, then studying them to see if he could detect extra voices. His book was read by Dr. Konstantin Rodiva, a psychologist and author of books on philosophy who lived in Germany. After visiting Jurgensen and listening to his tapes, Rodiva decided to experiment himself in order to answer the question of whether the voices were somehow connected with Jurgensen's particular personality. For 3 months, Rodiva could detect nothing paranormal on his tapes. Then he heard a whispered, "That is correct," in the Latvian language. This was in response to his remark that spirit world inhabitants, like those on Earth, might face certain limitations. Rodiva was encouraged, and he went on to collect a huge number of voice recordings. By the time he published the first book on his work in 1968, he had recorded some 70,000 phrases. Also, he had added some new techniques. He learned that if he tuned his radio to the so-called white noise between the stations, the tapes recorded at those wavelengths would contain voices. Word of Dr. Rodiva's work spread, and scientists and engineers in Europe tried to duplicate his experiments. One of those was Alex Schneider, a Swiss physicist who helped Rodiva develop a new method of recording. The two discovered that voices not heard by the human ear at the time of the recording could be detected on the tape when it was played back. Other pioneers who cooperated with Rodiva included Theodore Rudolph, a high-frequency engineer who worked for the Telefunken firm. Rudolph developed his own recording device called a goniometer. Another colleague of Dr. Rodiva was Dr. Franz Seidel, an electronics engineer in Vienna who developed a device he called a psychophone. Engineers and scientists were not the only people to become interested in experimenting with electronic voice phenomenon. Many lay people did also after reading Rodiva's book. So many began experimenting, in fact, that a German woman, Hanna Buschbeck, started a newsletter in 1969 to help the experimenters keep in touch and exchange ideas. Today, there are more than 1,000 people in Germany alone recording, analyzing, and cataloging paranormal voices. One parish priest in Switzerland Father Leo Schmidt, has recorded thousands of phrases, and that is only in Europe. Not until 1971 was Radiva's book brought out in English under the title Breakthrough, An Amazing Experiment in Electronic Communication of the Dead. It was published by the British firm of Colin Smythe, which is a fascinating story in itself. Mr. Smythe was handed a copy of Radiva's book at a book fair in Germany with a suggestion that he might want to consider publishing it. He turned it over to an associate, Peter Bander, who was skeptical about the whole matter. Until, that is, Smythe himself tried some experimenting with the voices and came up with the voice of Bander's mother, who is dead. The two publishers decided to have Radiva brought to England so that his tapes and his methods could be checked out by scientists and engineers under controlled conditions. Convinced that Radiva had, in fact, come up with unexplained voices on tape, they published the book, along with a record of some of the voices recorded. As a result, many more scientists and laymen throughout the world are now experimenting with EVP. So far, I have said little about the content of the messages these researchers are receiving. Frankly, there have been serious problems with these recordings. First, they are very difficult to hear and understand. As an example, let me play you a minute or so of Dr. Radiva's tapes of the electronic voices.
A request by the experimenter that the voice entities should tell him from where they came is uttered by a voice saying, "Delicious lunch." German, land of the soul. A voice later identified as that of a man who lived and died in a place called Kirnbach in the Black Forest, Germany, says, "Wartet auf Walter von Kirnbach. Wartet auf Walter von Kirnbach."
See what I mean? For one thing, you've probably noticed that the voices are about twice the speed of normal human speech, and that they have a rhythm different from ours. Then, there is the problem that Dr. Radiva knew many languages, Swedish, German, Russian, Latvian, Spanish, French, and English. Some critics of his work have reasoned, therefore, that what may actually be just stray sounds, he declared to be a meaningful phrase spoken in a language many other researchers would not understand. However, in 1981, our spirit communicators gave us what we consider the correct explanation of multiple voices. They said that whenever an EVP researcher establishes an open channel to the spirit world, where there are many persons who want to communicate, it is as though several grab the microphone and all try to speak at the same time. What comes through is a mixture of words and phrases, often in different languages. Then there are the psychologists and experts in psychic phenomena who have proposed some alternative explanations for the voices. The words and phrases could be just messages from the subconscious of the listener, they say, or from the subconscious of someone else, projected somehow onto the tape. One director of a nursing home in Germany, for instance, reported recording the voices of patients who were supposedly not conscious at the time. Most importantly, even if we assume that the voices on the tapes are those of people no longer living on Earth, we have to admit that what they have to say is rather trivial. A person may find reassuring evidence of life after death if he hears the voice of his mother, whom he knows to be dead. For the rest of us, the snatches of speech so far recorded on tape seem to have little value except to provide one more bit of evidence that life appears to continue on a different dimension after we die. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Jurgensen, Radiva, and the other electronic voice experimenters were wasting their time. Far from it. The significant thing about their work is that they did take that first, most difficult step in communication with another level of existence. It was comparable to my own first step 57 years ago when I experimented with the only kind of radio equipment then available, a crystal of galena and a wire cat whisker. At the time, it would have been almost impossible to convince me that clear, static-free radio communication would be feasible, and relatively soon, too. Within just my lifetime, we've progressed from that crude crystal set to TV broadcasts to our planet from space devices more than 1,000 million miles away. So it shouldn't be discouraging that Jurgensen and Rodiva's communications with the worlds of spirit were at first very crude. That is simply the nature of scientific research.
We're going to hold it right there for now, and you ain't heard nothing yet. Then they invented the way to actually talk to dead people, one dead person in particular. This is all scientifically documented on the website, the Spiritcom website, which we've got a link to, and it's rapidly going to collapse as more and more people head up there, because the next segment you're going to hear, well, you're going to have to decide for yourself. The documentation is unimpeachable, absolutely. I'm Art Bell from the high desert in the middle of the night. You're listening to Coast AM.
Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
The scientists who did the Spiritcom experiments that you're hearing this morning wrote a very unusual notice regarding copyrights, patents, suppression, and harassment. And as I pointed out earlier, stay tuned, you ain't heard nothing yet. All researchers affiliated with MetaScience Foundation during the 10 years of worldwide study of problems and potentials of electronic communication with the so-called dead have shared a common goal. They want the fruit of their labors and financial contributions to be made freely available to people of all races all over the world. Therefore, on their behalf, I state that, one, we have not filed for any patents in any countries on the many inventions represented by the equipment presented herein. Two, the material in this report has not been copyrighted. Three, the name Spiritcom has not been trademarked. But please note, everything in the cosmos is energy of one sort or another. And although all energies can be used for good or evil, it is our hope that the hundreds of individuals and organizations which carry these developments forward in the decades ahead will use them only for the good of all mankind. If any individuals alone, acting alone, or as part of a corporate entity endeavor to use these inventions solely for money-making purposes or to the detriment of any person, they are herewith forewarned. They should know that the first stop for them, after they sooner or later shed their physical bodies, will be at the bottom of the lowest astral plane, as described on the MetaScience diagram entitled, In Our Father's House, There Are Many Mansions. We are gradually waking up to the fact that our universe and all therein operates on the inexorable law of cause and effect. None can afford to scoff at the admonition, quote, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Any effort by any individual or organization to suppress or destroy the material contained herein will be useless. Any attempt to in any way harass the harmony of the MetaScience research team will be pointless. The material contained herein has been described and distributed throughout the world to more than 1,000 persons who are dedicated to the ultimate perfection of a clear, static-free, dependable system for communication with those persons now living in the higher worlds of spirit who desire to bring enlightenment to mankind. George W. Meek. It's the voice you will hear again in a moment. It's about to get really good. Stay right there. Are you or a loved one? It appears as though most of the participants in what you're hearing right now have themselves passed away. But their research has not. Thank God they documented it on the web. We've got a link up there for you. If you want to read the many schematic diagrams, see how they actually did what you're going to hear, take a look. It's on coasttocoastam.com website right now. In the meantime, back to George W. Meek.
Techniques are perfected only with the passage of time. The quality of the voices on the tapes began to improve, but very slowly. Let me play for you now an excerpt from some of the tapes made in 1977 by Raymond Kass, a hearing aid specialist in England. The German words following the comment by Mr. Kass are repeated a total of 3 times.
Hello, we're still here. We're packing up now to go back to Bridlington. And if there's someone here who is with us...
You'll agree that is a little easier to make out.
Not
I personally became involved in EVP research in 1971.
Stay tuned, though.
I was an electronic engineer and an inventor with more than 80 patents to his credit. He and I opened a small laboratory in Philadelphia. By 1975, we'd become convinced that an apparatus far more sophisticated than what I found then being used in Europe would be necessary. We also decided it was desirable to obtain help from the other side, that is, the active collaboration of someone who had died and who wanted to work with us in achieving two-way communication. That was easier said than done. About this time, we met William, an electronic technician who had well-developed clairvoyant and clairaudient capabilities. In other words, he had the ability to see and hear persons in other dimensions. With his help, we made contact with a man who, dead for 5 years, had been a medical doctor on our plane of life. Doc Nick, as we came to call him, had, fortunately, also been a ham radio operator. He suggested that instead of the so-called white noise traditionally used by EVP researchers, we should use certain audio frequencies. These would serve as an energy source against which the sounds produced by Doc Nick's vocal cords in his astral body could be played. Remember the electro-biochemical diagram on pages 13 and 14 of the Magic of Living Forever booklet? That shows the astral body. He said the result would be that our ears and a tape recorder would pick up his voice. This suggestion sounded plausible to us because we'd observed that all EVP voices had to steal energy from radio frequencies, spoken or sung words, music, or natural or artificially created white noise and so forth. After some experimentation, we had the great thrill on October 27, 1977, of hearing Doc Nick's first words just barely coming through the quite loud mixture of tones we had provided as a starting point. To you, hearing it for the first time, this short exchange may be almost as difficult to understand as the EVP voice samples given earlier. Here's the exchange.
Yeah.
Stay tuned, everybody. Still very hard to understand. These are the very early experiments you're hearing, so stay tuned. Actually, almost an annoying tone, huh? The idea of providing a tone, a frequency for the other side to modulate, that's what you're hearing. But still, the good stuff lies ahead. I know, very difficult to understand. I attempted to skip ahead, but I really want you to hear all of this.
We really can't blame William for being a bit scared when he had his first communication with someone who had been among the so-called dead for 5 years. But he showed his own good sense when he remarked to Doc Nick, "Who do you think will believe anything like this?" Our position in releasing these materials is precisely that of Doc Nick when he replied, "Don't worry about that. It's not important. Believe me." Those who scoff at this information, even after carefully evaluating this tape and the related printed materials, may later find themselves in the embarrassing position of one member of the French Academy of Sciences years ago. He told his learned colleagues, "I personally have examined Mr. Edison's phonograph, and I find that it is nothing but the clever use of ventriloquism." If some of you scoff at our breakthrough, it is probably because Doc Nick sounds a bit like a robot. We certainly agree that he does. But please recognize what you just heard for what it is. A start had been made towards someday getting continuous two-way conversation instead of jammed together bits of pieces, phrases that were characteristic of tens of thousands of the earlier EVP voice recordings. At about this time, it is our great good luck to come into contact with a scientist among the so-called dead, who identified himself as Dr. George Jeffries Mueller. We remembered the 2,000-year-old injunction in the Bible to the mediums of that day to test spirit communicators. So we checked to see that Dr. Mueller really was who he claimed to be, and we hit the jackpot. He told us where we could find a copy of his death certificate issued in 1967. He told us his Social Security number. And he told us intimate details of his life and scholastic activities at the University of Wisconsin and Cornell University, his instructorship in physics at Cornell, and his top-level jobs in government and industry. His photograph and biographical data are given in our publication entitled Spiritcom. The fact that Dr. Mueller had written a textbook on electronics and had had a lifelong hobby of studying the theory of music enabled him to help us carry the research far beyond the level we had reached with Doc Nick and further refine our understanding of the audio frequencies we needed to arrive at our second major breakthrough. It occurred on September 22, 1980. Here it is.
Yes, sir, I understood, Doctor.
Very well.
Okay. I'm sorry, I was lighting a cigarette. Yes, I did, Doctor.
Very well. Now I'm back about 3 feet. Now I'm back about 3 feet. And I'm going to do it on the same. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now I turn the frequency of that with it.
Very well, Doctor.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, Mary's little lamb certainly is adding to its claim to immortality. But since one of the first rules of science is that of replication, nothing could be more gratifying than to have Dr. Mueller's conversation confirm that we had at last established meaningful instrumental communication with a person who had shed his physical body. Now, thanks to Dr. Mueller's contributions to the new communication systems, we want to share a remarkable conversation with another communicator. What makes it remarkable is that he says he died 151 years ago. Fred Engstrom, which is how he identifies himself, says he lived in a rural area in Virginia and died in 1830. Our check of the scanty birth records of that place and time has not yet confirmed his existence then. But as you learned in The Magic of Living Forever, serial time, as we know it, does not exist in the worlds of spirit. When you listen to this next conversation, observe that this quality of Fred Engstrom's voice, while still robot-like, is vastly better than that of Doc Nick's voice at the time of our first breakthrough.
Would you give me a card of sense? Oh, boy.
my wife.
Oh, that's right. You said you were married before you
were. Okay. I'm glad you have a sense of humor. Well, if you can hear me, you'll be able to hear. You'll be able to hear that because I'll make a tape of it, okay?
Okay, yeah, oh boy, that'll be fine. Oh boy, that's right, your message, that you were married. Oh, and you're the married Bill.
About 8 years. Well, Natalie, I feel like I'm in my 20s, but when I say my mirror says, who are you fooling, old man?
Yeah, I know it's with me.
Yeah, it's okay, Fred. Good night.
The following examples of Dr. Mueller's voice are taken from many hours of two-way conversations with him, some of which lasted for half an hour or more. These tapes represent the present limited capability of the electromagnetic etheric device we call Spiricon, a word coined by taking portions of the two words spirit and communication. This particular device is called Spiricon Mark IV.
All right, I'm going to hold it right there for the moment, and there's just a little more to go. What you're hearing is real. What you're hearing is absolutely real. The documentation for the equipment used to produce what you're hearing is available on the webpage that has a link on coasttocoastam.com right now. In the middle of the night on Halloween, an appropriate night for something of this magnitude, never, I believe, heard before, ever, on commercial radio or perhaps any other, you're hearing actual ongoing communication with the dead. In this case, a German engineer from the high desert in the darkness. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Good morning, everybody. Actually, Ghost to Ghost AM, and we're going to be taking open line calls on entity attacks shortly. Just a little more to go. George W. Meek was a scientist, a engineer, and he did decades of work along with others on direct communication with the dead, and they achieved it. I've got just a little more to play for you in a moment, And then we're going to begin taking calls. And again, I understand that some of this is very difficult to understand. However, what you're hearing is real, on real life, ongoing, two-way communication with those who have passed away. It's decades of work. It deserves to be heard. What you're hearing is historical. Everything is vibrational. It's thought now there are many universes. None other than Dr. Michio Kaku and other very reputable men have alluded to that fact. That may well be the communication you're hearing tonight. So once again, here is George W. Meek, and we'll finish this up quite quickly, but listen very carefully.
The following examples of Dr. Mueller's voice are taken from many hours of two-way conversations with him, some of which lasted for half an hour or more. These tapes represent the present limited capability of the electromagnetic etheric device we call Spiritcom, a word coined by taking portions of the two words spirit and communication. This particular device is called Spiritcom Mark IV. The great value of the technical assistance given by Dr. Mueller is dramatically shown by this next excerpt, taken from a Spiritcom conversation in April 1981. Near the start, he gives his reactions to one of the audio frequencies and then proceeds to pinpoint an electronic circuit problem on the video apparatus on which he and William were working. Specific Dr. Mueller was in pinpointing the problem on the experimental video device on which he and William were working. He said the problem lay near the third transistor in the preamp unit. The problem was an impedance mismatch and could be corrected by using a 150 ohm half watt resistor in parallel with a 0.0047 microfarad ceramic capacitor. What better proof could science want that Dr. Mueller's mind, memory banks, and personality are still alive and functioning in a useful and most dramatic way? And now we share an excerpt in which they further discuss our Viticom research project. Incidentally, the problems of developing a workable Viticom system seem even more monumental than those of perfecting Spiricom.
What's that again?
Dr. Mueller turned aside from the microphone to talk with another spirit person standing in the lab. William was unable to see him visually or clairvoyantly, or to hear him clairaudiently. The spirit, who told Dr. Mueller his name was Nathaniel, seemingly could not talk through Spiritcom. With Dr. Mueller as intermediary, William and Nathaniel discussed boyhood activities, including pranks, in which they had both participated more than half a century ago. The contacts with Dr. Mueller were sporadic. Days and even weeks would pass with no contact, even though William left the electronic equipment turned on. Then Dr. Mueller would pay an unexpected visit, like this one. Then, equally frustrating, there would be a totally unexplained termination of contact in the midst of a very useful conversation. Here is an example.
Well, I understand that a lot of things I don't understand. Do you have any suggestions, Doctor? Do you have any suggestions? Dr. Mueller? Dr. Mueller? Oh, boy. Dr. Mueller, are you there, sir? Oh, my God. Dr. Mueller? Oh, boy.
In the early months of our conversations with Dr. Mueller, electromagnetic factors, the phase of the moon, sunspots, or other unknown factors resulted in poor quality of Dr. Mueller's voice, as you will notice in this excerpt, in which Dr. Mueller responds to William's mention of possible surgery. these comments and his observations and his own death 14 years previously are worth careful listening, even though the poor quality may try your patience. On more joyful subjects than surgery and death experiences. Often, Dr. Mueller displayed his delightful humor. In this excerpt, he speaks of his fondness for carrots and cabbages.
Yeah, I just turned on the tape recorder, Doctor.
Very well,
he said to hurry back, and I did. That has been exactly 1 week ago. Yeah, hold yourself.
Ho, yourself. There you have it. All right. Listen, I'm going to stop it there. There's an equal, another portion, an equal second portion to this. But what you've heard back from the days of Tesla, literally beginning with the days of Tesla, it was thought and experimented with. And what you just heard was the result of decades of experimentation. And I want to again stress that any of you involved in electronics would want to go up to the link on our website where it is very carefully documented what was done, exactly the kind of equipment that was used, the schematics for that equipment in order to actually communicate with the dead in the fashion that you just heard. And, of course, that's now very old technology, but I believe what you just heard was quite historic, very historic. I know trying the patience of some who probably could not hear it. Others, I imagine, heard certain parts very clearly. And again, there were a series of tones and audio vibrations that were used to allow the dead to modulate something with electromagnetic force. And that's what you heard. You heard the modulation of tones by electromagnetic force that became audible if you listened carefully to the human ear, and you heard, no doubt, you must have heard some of the ongoing communication. This work, these schematics, these diagrams should all live on for somebody else to grab onto and now begin that experimentation. All of the documentation is there if you want to pursue it. I thought there would be nothing more bone-chilling on a Halloween night than hearing the real thing. That's what you just heard. So thank you, Brennan Cook. Thank you to the person in Croatia who passed it on. Decades of work, now not lost. First-time caller line, you are on the air. Ghost to Ghost AM. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. What is your first name?
I'm Gene.
Okay, Gene, what's up?
I'm calling from Florida, Arizona tonight. First-time caller. Hit and miss listener over the years, but now I got XM satellites, so I hear you every night now. The last two nights have just been phenomenal.
Yes. Did you Did you hear portions of what I just played?
Oh, I've been listening to it. And, you know, Art, my dad lost his larynx. And for about 6 years, you know, we had to communicate with a PAL unit.
And it sounded kind of like that, didn't it?
Exactly like that. And maybe I can probably understand more than the average person can, because when my dad first started hadn't to use it, he was difficult to understand at first.
I think it's a remarkable, incredible demonstration of actual ongoing communication with the dead. I've never heard anything like it.
Oh, me neither. Just, I'm an audio engineer. I went online, looked at the schematics. I think we had to build this thing.
Yeah, it's all there. I mean, every bit of it. These men wanted to make sure that this did not die with them, and it has not. Obviously, it is possible to communicate with the dead, with those in another dimension. They proved it, and they left the evidence.
Well, I certainly believe that, and I did want to share a entity attack that happened to me. I also sent you a picture tonight of a photograph I took in a train station in Needles, California, the El Garces train station. I've got a new digital camera, and I thought I was actually making mistakes with it, and I was, like, editing all these things out, not realizing what they were.
All right, proceed anyway with the story, and I'll look up the photograph.
Okay. Well, this started happening when I was about 4 years old. We lived in a house there in Needles that was built in the late 1800s. In fact, it was built before electric wiring. About the 30s, it got actually wired, and it had the old silver wiring on it across the walls of the turn switches.
Oh, yes.
And all of our ceiling lights actually had pull chains. And in the summertime, Needles is just like Vegas. You know, it's very hot.
Very, yes.
And there was one room downstairs. It was like a little den off the living room. And my mom insisted that that's where I should sleep. And we always had problems with furniture moving around, and of course I'm a little kid. I'm not sure what's going on, you know, how you are. Just everything should be just normal. This must happen all the time. And there was an entity that kept coming through the wall, coming after me, grabbing at me, trying to tug me. One night it actually got a hold of me. I got away. I started jumping on the bed. I wanted to pull this pull chain. Of course, the next morning my mom found a light on, and her little thing was just make the string shorter and shorter. And one night this thing got a hold of me by the feet, drug me, and of course I couldn't go through the wall. It did. Mm. Got away from it. I literally pulled the wiring off the ceiling to get that light on.
Oh my God.
And I had bruises on my ankles. It was, you know, I'm 4 years old.
4 years old. You're right. A 4 year old would not know what should not be.
Well, we, as a family, years later, the final straw was my dad got locked in the basement. We had a trap door in the back of the house, and all of us were gone. I don't know if we were grocery shopping or whatever, but he was down in that basement, and the cold spot freezer, big Sears cold spot freezer, freezer, wind up over the top of the trap door, and it's got a half of beef in it, and it must weigh 400 or 500 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And we get home. My mom has to get the neighbors to come over and pull this thing off. And I swear it was probably about 2 weeks later, my mom wakes us kids up one morning and says, we're moving today.
Huh. Really?
And my wife, we've been married for 26 years, and it bothers her. I always sleep with my head under the covers. To this day.
Yeah, I don't blame you. There was a man who called last night. I mean, the covers are universal protection for the human species against bad things.
Actually, they're not.
Well, I realize that. I realize that. But in his case, this entity came and whipped the blanket and the sheet right off him. Did you hear that?
Oh, I heard that. And that was similar things that would happen to me. It didn't matter how much I hid, this thing still came after me.
Yeah.
So, but as time went on, as a family, we would sit down and talk about it. And of course, my mom and dad were more open about it. And the stories that they started telling us kids was just unbelievable.
I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you, and good night. This is Ghost to Ghost AM. We're looking for entity attack stories. If you have, as that gentleman, ever been attacked in any way by an entity, well, here's where the stories will happen tonight. I'm Art Bell.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born.
B-1-9-1. the sight of a touch or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and to use them to help us to find.
Wanna take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
This night, Ghost to Ghost AM, ladies and gentlemen. And what I'm looking for is entity attack stories. Many out there have been attacked by, well, who knows what. And that's what we're delving into on this Halloween night. In the first hour and plus 20 minutes or so, I presented to you what I consider to be historical evidence of communication, ongoing, two-way communication with the dead. All of the schematics, all of the pictorials, everything you would need to be able to do it is contained on a link on our website at coasttocoastam.com. Now, it may get jammed, but there'll be a lot of audio engineers and engineers in general, I hope, and electronics engineers going up to that site, downloading the information. And with today's technology, I can assure you, easily duplicating what they did, improving on it as well. And I think this is a real McCoy, folks. This is real communication with the dead. If we want to know what it's really all about and answer some of the questions all of us have wanted answered all our lives, whether there's anything at all after our physical existence, believe me, you want to look into this. Good morning. It's Halloween. Or, perhaps by now, for you, it's the Day of the Dead. We're doing attack stories. People who have been attacked by entities. Join us. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, good evening, Art. How are you?
I'm just fine. What's your first name?
The name is Gregory.
Okay, Greg.
And I'm calling from New York, New York.
New York, New York.
Yes, good old New York.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now my story goes back to the mid-1980s. I was studying abroad in Athens, Greece. My family's from Greece. I wanted to go back and reconnect with my roots.
Sure.
And before I was returning back to New York, I went to go say goodbye to my uncle and my grandmother. They lived down in southern Greece near Sparta. I stayed with them many, many times in this house, and nothing ever happened, so I didn't expect anything to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I arrived, it was pretty late at night, and there were some relatives visiting from the States, and they were all sleeping downstairs in the one room. There's no central heat, so they all, there was a portable heater, so they were all sleeping in that room. So they put me upstairs by myself. So now to go upstairs, you have to go from the outside, there's an outside staircase. And there's a separate door, which I locked, and you go into a foyer. And then you go into the bedroom, and there's two French doors, which I lock with the latch. So I go to bed, I'm lying in bed, and I fall asleep. Now, the bed is facing the latch, the doors that are latch closed.
Right.
And I wake up in the middle of the night, and I hear a knock on the door, which I thought was, it must have been 3 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, the outside door was locked. Who can this be? So I said, who is it? Nothing. They just kept on knocking on the door. it just got louder and louder and louder. And I thought maybe it was an animal or something, so I picked up my sneaker ready to throw it.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, the two doors, the French doors, just started shaking violently, like boom, 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 boom.
Oh.
So I thought maybe it was an earthquake, but nothing else shook.
Uh-huh.
Then it just stopped. So I just grabbed the other sneaker. And I didn't know what to do. I was just shaking in bed. I finally fall back asleep. And the strange thing was I was having a dream that I was leaving. I was buying a train ticket, and somebody was mugging me from behind. And I remember saying to myself in the dream, well, this is strange because my wallet is in the front of my jacket and I'm behind.
Right.
Well, I wake up from the dream, and there is an entity or something straddling on my back in the bed. I was sleeping on my stomach.
Huh.
And I feel this bony hand grabbing my right buttock and grabbing it, and you can feel the fingers, the bones on his hand. So I try to pick myself up kind of like a push-up.
In other words, there was no flesh, only bones.
That's what it felt like. You felt long,
yes.
Bony fingers.
Yes.
So I try to pick myself up like a push-up.
Mm-hmm.
And another hand grabs the back of my head and smashes it back in the pillow. And this was such superhuman strength. It was just unreal. And I try to pick myself up again and again. It pushes my face back into the pillow. At the same time, it's still grabbing, my rear buttock over there. This must have happened maybe four or five times where I try to pick up, and at the same time, I feel this thing on my back, and it's still grabbing me. About the sixth time, I finally let out a scream, and I was able to push up all the way, and it just stopped.
I might have screamed long before the fifth or sixth time. Oh, my God.
Well, the funny thing was, of course, I waited till sunlight before I fell back asleep.
At least.
Yes, and then my uncle woke me up, and I went downstairs, and they're making fun of the lazy American who slept all night. So I turned to my one cousin who I just met who was sleeping there, and he was from Baltimore, and I said to him, do you have an open mind? And he looked at me, he goes, did something happen to you too?
Oh.
I said, well, what happened to you? He goes, I don't want to talk about it, but I'll never sleep in that bedroom again.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
All right, got it. I really appreciate your call, sir. Thank you. That's exactly what I was after. That's exactly what I mean. So what was that? The bony fingers being slammed again and again into the bed, not just one person, but several, at least two occupants of the house. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Ghost to Ghost AM. Hello.
Hi, this is Ricky in Atlanta, and I just got a little bit of that last guy's call. I will tell you, I live in a haunted house.
Now?
Yes, we're still here. When we bought the house, the guy that was the previous owner shook my husband's hand, and he says, good luck in the mortician's house.
Oh.
Anyway, this is true. A lot of things are happening. Things are moving and moving around and noises and all that. And even tape some conversations or not, some voices and mocking and stuff. Anyway, but the worst thing, I'm going to bed and I got petrified to go to bed and it would first start laying on me.
It was something
I could feel them touching the covers and just basically like inching up on the bed.
Yes.
And laying on me. And when this happens, Art, you cannot move. It freezes you. You cannot move.
You're paralyzed.
Yes, sir. And there is no screaming. You cannot scream. You cannot do anything. And my husband's laying right beside me. Finally, I reach over and touch him and I wake him, and he finally wakes up. What happened? And I tell him. So we got to where we slept closer, and so I could touch him. And the worst thing that happened is this: I could feel it laying on me, or itching up and laying on me, and the thing tried to have sex with me. I'm not exaggerating.
I understand many reports, so that you might know, include sex or attempted sex.
Well,
yes,
it felt on your privates. It felt like. And again, I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. It felt like something was trying to tickle me with feathers, or just, and they couldn't. I guess they couldn't figure out what to do. I don't know, but it was terrifying.
God, that's odd.
And now I basically sit up at night, listen to you, and go to bed when you go off, and and try to go to sleep, and it's changed my life.
It obviously has. You wait for the sun to come up
exactly,
over the horizon.
Exactly.
All right, my dear, thank you. Take care. There you have it. That would change your life, wouldn't it? If that really happened to you, I mean, think about it for a moment. It would change your life, wouldn't it? You might not go to sleep until the sun began to come up over the horizon. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, John.
Your name is John?
My name is John.
Okay, John, I'm Art.
570 WKBN out of Ohio.
Yes, sir. What's up, John?
Hello. I just got a real quick one. About 15 years ago, I was sleeping in my bedroom, and the door was locked, and it was sort of early morning. Art?
Yes.
And, by the way, I've been listening to you since day one.
That's a lot of days. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for all the entertainment.
You're very welcome.
Okay. And the door was locked in my bedroom, and I was sleeping on the floor because it was a hot summer night, and it was beginning the break of dawn. So the light was coming through the window,
mm-hmm.
and I feel a kick on my side, which wakes me up.
Mm-hmm.
And the light comes and it hits my pillow. This is important, that I can see my pillow after I was woken up by a kick in my side. Okay?
Yes, yes.
The door is locked. I'm the only one in the bedroom.
Yes.
Someone kicks me in the side.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The next thing that happens, there's these two things of spit, if you will, that land on the pillow.
Really?
Gigantic spats, if you will, of...
phlegm.
Yes, sir.
Yes, okay.
That land on the pillow, the larger than the size of silver dollars,
oh,
if you will.
Wonderful.
And I saw one that was on the pillow, and then I saw the next one come and hit the pillow and actually land on the pillow.
Yes, sir.
I felt someone was standing over top of me doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my story.
Well, wonderful. Thank you for that. A phlegmy contribution. Ay, ay, ay. You see, you ask and you receive. This is pretty unusual stuff. I mean, the thing about that story, for example, is you wouldn't make that up, would you? You really wouldn't make that up. Or you have an awfully active, strange imagination if you did. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hello, Art.
Hi.
Are you going to be able to sleep tonight hearing all these stories?
I don't know. Let's see what you contribute.
Well, before I tell you mine, what happened to me, I just want to clarify that I'm a spiritual person, and I have been since I was 2 years old. And this essence came around me about 12 years ago when my beloved sister died. And he still pops in and out to this day. The time he got angry and violent with me happened one night when I was going through an out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm.
I was laying in my bed, and I was lifted from my body to the left and was on top of it with what I thought was angels holding me under my shoulders and under my ankles. And they were, this is the best way I can describe it, Art. They were rippling my body. I felt it rippling, and it was giving me such great pleasure. I was laughing out loud, and I was thanking them.
You wouldn't think that angels would hold you down somehow, but okay.
Yeah, you see, I was up and to the left, and I was just going through this great, great pleasure when they lowered me back into my body, and I was starting to come awake when I felt him come into the room, and he was down at my feet, and I sensed, all of this you sense, and I sensed he came to join in on the fun, but he went to move my feet and my legs apart,
mm-hmm.
and I sensed danger from him because I had gone through this with him before, but this time I just moved my feet at him to just, you know, tell him go away.
Yeah, this is not an entity you can actually physically see then.
Well, listen to the rest of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it made him mad. I could feel, you know, he was very indignant at what I had done. And when I did that, he grabbed each of my ankles just violently and so fast that it jerked my body. And I heard this loud scream. I know I didn't do it, my body didn't do it, but I heard this loud scream inside of me saying, no, and then my legs just kicked out at him so harsh that I felt I touched him, I knocked him down, and he went back. Now, I sensed him getting up, and I didn't feel that he was mad at me, but just that he was horribly rejected, and I could feel him slump away. And now I'm fully awake, and I want to get a look at him. And so I jump up, and I go to the end of the bed. And what I saw was the last of him, because he was disappearing into some hole, into something. And I saw this long, heavy, fat, grayish tail just swagging and swaying until he just went and he was gone. But, you know, and like I said, he comes around, he pops in and out, and what he does to me now sometimes, and he's done it a lot, is I know his nails. I've seen his nails. They're very, very long and very sharp.
Yes.
And at the night, sometimes, on my back, he takes them, and he presses into my flesh. But, Art, I don't feel anything. I know they're sharp. But I don't feel anything. I feel him really trying to hurt me.
Are there physical marks left?
I've had them on my arms sometimes, but on the back, I can't see my back, and I don't ask anybody to look at my back. But I feel I'm protected, because what I feel is that they've been blunted. So I just feel a pressure, an irritating pressure of him trying really hard to hurt me and to work at it. But I feel I'm protected. And they don't go in.
Well, that's...
But he does do that. And
all right.
He's been around me a long time.
Got it. I really appreciate your call. Thank you very much. And take care. You have to wonder, I wonder, how somebody could, I don't know, get used to that. How could you get used to that? I guess maybe you don't. But she almost sounded to that point, didn't she? As though this has been going on for so long that she was used to it in some manner. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm just calling a first time caller.
Yes, sir.
Regarding an experience I had when I was about 14.
Sure. Fire away, you're on the air. That is it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in San Diego, California. This happened in a small town in Missouri. I was about 14. My sister, myself, and my mother lived in a small two-bedroom home. I had my own room, and my sister and my mother had their own room down the hall from each other. And in the middle of the night, in the dead of sleep, my mother yelled out for me, and I yelled out for her at the same time. We each tried to get up, but we were held down by something. I don't know what it every part of our body, we couldn't move at all.
Here we go again. So paralyzed virtually, both you and your mother.
Yes, and it was. We didn't see anything. I mean, there was nothing visible that we saw, and it seemed like forever, but it was probably actually only for maybe 15 or 20 seconds.
That can seem like forever.
Yeah, especially when, you know, I mean, my mother was hollering, and I could tell that she was horrified. And I'm trying to get up, and I couldn't move any part of my body. And finally, when we were released, you know, you're trying with such force to get up that you almost pop up once whatever it is lets you go.
Yes, of course.
I ran into my mother's room, and she was very upset and scared and said, "Why didn't you come? I was hollering for you."
Uh-huh.
And that's when we found out that it happened to both of us. She didn't know at the time that I also was held down. And just horrified us. And this was a home that was only 6 or 7 years old. But a lot of strange things happened. We used to use a Ouija board. And we stopped using it because we started having some things happen that were very strange. We had a priest come out and everything, got rid of the Ouija board. But several incidents happened after that. We moved to a town about an hour and a half away from where it started, and it seemed that, you know, and I'm not a true believer in ghosts. I mean, I've had enough things happen to me that I know there's something, but I'm not one of those that just believe, oh, yeah, you know, I'm just not like that. I try to be realistic and say, you know, there has to be some explanation for it. But, yeah, that was it was very strange.
I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's the second case of not one but two people being paralyzed, held down. In one case, his head being slammed repeatedly against the pillow. Pretty weird stuff. But I'll tell you again, after hearing that tape in the first hour plus, well, let me put it to you this way. When I first heard the tape, and that was a little bit earlier tonight, little beads of sweat. Now, I'm into electronics, and I did all the reading about the research they did, the instruments they used, and how they did it. Little beads of sweat began to break out on my forehead. I'm serious. And I understand that for many of you, it just sounded like so much noise you couldn't understand. For some of the rest of you who hear audio well, what you heard should have caused little beads of sweat to form on your forehead. In the darkness on Halloween, I'm Art Bell.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It's either Halloween or it's the Day of the Dead. Either way, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. In a moment, we'll continue with your stories generally. Looking for entity attack stories, actual, rather negative experiences with entities. And we ask that if possible, you not use a cell phone so that we might clearly hear every word. We'll be right back, hopefully, with you. Top of the darkness from the high desert, as we continue with your calls this evening. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi. What is your first name?
My name is Scott. I'm in Scarborough, Ontario,
hey,
Canada.
Scott. Right.
And I listen on 640 AM Mojo.
All right. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You had mentioned to me during the break that you're a ham operator?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. I recognize that what I played in the first hour and 20 minutes or so was very hard for a lot of people to decipher and understand, but I take it you heard it, at least probably understood parts of it. And what do you think of what you heard?
Maybe 60 or 70% of it. I could pick out every word, but Of course, I've been doing that for 15 years,
picking
out the words out of the noise. You get used to it after a while. I don't know. What can I make of it? I mean,
that was decades of real scientific work. You can take a look at the diagrams up on the website.
I already did, and I think I have a little transistor outfit that does QRPP, and I think I'll just set it to just transmit a little signal and receive the signal as they did on their website, and I'm going to test it and see if it works.
Good. That was my intent. I thought, you know, these men did something very real, and this shouldn't be just dropped.
You don't need a lot of power, just a couple of milliwatts, just enough to get from your transmitter to your receiver, and from what it looked like on the website, very quick. And there's very simple transmitters out there, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we hadn't done this, it would have been lost to all of history. Anyway, sir, what's up?
Well, I think I have a story that falls right up the alley you're looking for tonight.
Fire away.
Well, this story is told by my grandfather, told me many times when I was a young kid, and it wasn't just a story to scare myself. It was a story he told me that happened to him during the war.
Mm-hmm.
It's World War II, and he was stationed in England, and him and his friend had some time off, and he said cars were very hard to get a hold of, gas was hard to get a hold of. What was actually plentiful was horses and carriages.
Right.
And so him and his friend were out, and they were doing whatever all night long, and they were on their way back to wherever they were staying. And he admits that they had a little bottle, and they were drinking, and they had finished it, and his friend threw it over this wrought iron fence into these bushes. And so the horse is going along this road, and he said this figure came out of this area behind the fence, physically walked through this wrought iron fence and up to the horse where the reins of the horse were, and grabbed onto the reins of the horse. Now, he said he was shocked because the horse was going along at a pretty good clip, but the man was walking normally. The man brought the horse to a stop,
yes,
came back to the carriage, and passed. They thought he was going to grab his buddy's boot, but what he did was he passed his finger through the boot, and he turned, walked back through the wrought iron fence, and just into the bushes, into the darkness, and was gone. They went back to where they were, told all of their buddies, and I guess they were laughed at. He said nobody believed him. Well, the very next morning, he had to take his friend to sick call. His friend got very sick. What happened was he got blood poisoning in that leg, in that foot.
Ooh, really?
It went right up through his leg and killed him within 2 days.
Oh, my God.
So
whatever it was that passed through him left a little deposit of some sort.
Yeah, and it killed him within 2 days, and there was no marks or anything. So my grandfather was during the war. He was a soldier. He was mad. He was going to go back and find this guy.
So he was killed by a spirit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was going to go find this guy. Well, remember, he thought, even though the guy walked through a wrought iron fence twice, he thought it was a guy.
Uh-huh.
He was going to go back and kill this guy and revenge his buddy's death. He found the road, about a week later, he said, found the road, found the wrought iron fence, was looking around, got around the bushes and looked, and guess what? It was a graveyard. The guy threw the bottle into a graveyard, and my father, or my grandfather told me as a young kid that he thinks this was a ghost that killed his friend.
Got it. I appreciate your call. That's a good one. Wow. So it turns out that casually thrown bottle of now empty booze landed in, well, I guess in just the wrong place and really annoyed somebody on the other side. The finger passes through the boot, the leg, and then the rest of the body become infected quickly, and he dies. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm all right.
I think I called the wrong number, though, because I'm calling from Mississauga, Ontario, Canada.
Are you? Well, that's all right. You got to us. You got to us. That's all that counts.
Anyway, so I think I have, I learned my lesson the hard way.
Oh?
Because I made fun of a friend of mine one night,
we were having a couple of drinks, and she kind of, like, you know, said, I really got to talk to you about something. And I said, what? And she said, well, I get raped by this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of looked at her and went, okay, maybe you should go see a psychiatrist. Something's wrong with you. You know, I didn't take it seriously. I thought she was off her rocker.
Of course.
But about a week later, this thing came to me.
Came to you.
Came to me. And it was almost like because I mocked it,
mm-hmm.
it came to say, well, you don't think that I exist? Well, I exist. But
yeah.
it's almost like it was two things in one.
Was it a sexual assault?
I think it could have been because I was sleeping on my stomach and my mother was home at the time. And I felt the fingers go around my arm, like my wrist, one at a time, like one finger at a time curl around my wrist on the one arm. And I was coming to. And I remember thinking, why is my mother in my room and why is she grabbing my arm, you know?
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, and then the fingers went around the other arm, and that's when I started coming to and starting to panic.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went around my ankles, and I knew there's more than one person in the room, and I bolted upright, and there was nothing there. But still to this day, I mean, unless you experience something like it, you think that people are, you know...
Did you say anything to your friend?
I didn't say anything to my friend, but I actually said something to my boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
and he actually confronted it in a dream. It came to him in a dream, and he told me he wasn't scared, so what it did was it reduced him back to his 5-year-old self and then proceeded to terrify him.
Well, there you have it. Apparently, it's not good to mock these things, as she found out. I don't know. What do you think? You know, as you listen to these people, they're not joking with you. They're not just having a little fun, and they're not just trying to get on the air and make some noise. They're telling you stories about things that really happened to them. Or maybe you just disbelieve no matter what. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Dean. I'm listening in Providence, Rhode Island on WPRO.
Welcome.
Glad to speak with you. First time caller, long time listener.
Yes, sir.
The story that I have, I've got to say that there was maybe minimal physical confrontation from the entity, but I think you and your listeners will find this story very interesting.
Okay.
In the early 40s, my mother and father had just been married, and he was going on vacation. And my dad's boss said to him, if you're going down to Cape Cod, how would you like to stay in the summer house? So my father said that was what was great. And he said, well, it's been closed up for years. You're going to have to open the shutters and probably sweep it out. It's just a summer house.
Got it.
Anyway, my mom and dad and three other couples, so now there's eight people total, mm-hmm. went down and did just that, opened the place up, swept it out. And they were sleeping in sleeping bags, all in the, I guess you'd call it the living room.
Yes.
During the night, they all sensed something walking around the room, brushing against the sleeping bags.
Hmm.
And they all woke up to see a very elderly lady wearing a house coat and long gray hair and a white cardigan sweater over the house coat standing in the middle of the room.
Hmm.
What surprised all of them was that she had an opaque look. Almost like you could look right through her.
Yeah, half there and half gone.
Yes. My father said to her, hello, you know, who are you? Can we help you? And the woman turned and looked down at all of them and proceeded to walk right through the wall and never seen again. And, again, the thing that I think is interesting here is that all eight people saw this.
Yes, eight witnesses. All right, well, listen, thank you very much. Eight witnesses. Our world is so full of the unexplainable, the inexplicable. You just can't explain it. Many times you cannot scientifically prove what happened. Well, maybe with the exception of what I played in the first hour and 20 minutes, which was some pretty damn hard evidence from my point of view. and deserves to be followed up on. But many you just can't prove. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. And again, if you listen to the voices, it's quite apparent that these people are not saying things just to be talking.
Vancouver, British Columbia.
All right. What I'm going to do is just remove your last name.
Okay,
you're not
sorry,
supposed to get that. So let's try it again. Your first name is what?
My first name is Valya.
Valya,
and
okay.
I'm calling from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Welcome.
Welcome. I love your show. I'm an addict. You're wrecking havoc on my marriage because I listen to you every night instead of going to bed with my husband. But the story happened to me in Billings, Montana. My sister and I lived in had our room in the basement of our house, and she was a couple of years older than me. Every night she would wake up with horrible nightmares, and it just got to be a habit that I would roll over in my bed, turn the light on, and have her tell me what was happening to her.
Sure.
And this one particular night, as I was, she was screaming, and as I rolled over to turn the light on, I saw something scurry between our beds, our twin beds, and go out the door,
oh,
like on all fours.
Oh.
And I started talking to her, asking her what happened, and she said that the person was attacking her with a ski pole. And in the morning when we woke up and we walked through our family room to go up the stairs, to the right was our laundry room, which is where we kept all our skis, and there were seven in our family. All our skis and ski poles were all strewn through the laundry room, and nobody heard any sounds at all that night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what to tell you except thank you for the story.
You're welcome. And we also found out afterwards that they built our homes on an Indian burial ground.
Okay. Thank you very much. A lot of that, too, of course, associated with ghost stories of various sorts. It's apparently not good to build on a graveyard. I would guess any graveyard. Now, people often say Native American, but I would think any graveyard at all wouldn't be exactly a perfect site for your new house. On our international line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. I'm going to hang up if you don't speak.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes, hi, this is Holly from Falconer, New York.
Holly?
Yeah.
Okay, Holly, what's up?
I have an apartment in Falconer, New York, and the curtains and stuff move.
The curtains move?
Yeah.
Okay, you've got a radio on, don't you, Holly?
Yeah.
Turn it off.
Okay.
All right. We'll wait while Holly tries to get to the radio. Have it close by, folks, so you can turn it off right away.
Okay.
All right, Holly. Now, the curtains move.
Yeah, it does it all the time. And then now my loved ones who passed away in the past is coming into my sleep now. Like my uncle, my boyfriend that passed away in 96.
You mean your dreams?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So did one of them attack you?
No, they talked to me.
They talked to you?
Yeah.
And said what?
They're talking about the one I'm seeing now, my boyfriend, the one I'm seeing now.
What do you mean you're seeing now?
I'm seeing someone now, and they're telling me things about him. And I could see him in my dreams, their hands are out. They're trying to grab me and my boyfriend.
Oh?
In my dreams.
Okay. Well, I appreciate passing that on. I'm not sure that maybe it does constitute an attack of sorts, doesn't it? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Is this Art?
It is. Yes, sir.
Hey, Art. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, this is Gizmo. That's my preferred nickname. Hey, you know what? Somebody told me about you back in 98, and I've been listening as much as I can ever since.
All right.
Hey, okay, I got a couple stories, and first I'd like to talk about the voice things.
Yes.
Okay, you know what? I got an idea there, and I hope somebody can work on that and maybe bring that a little bit better.
Well, what you heard, sir, was historical. It was sort of a culmination of the work that began with Tesla and came forward through the 70s and the 80s, where it kind of stopped. Thank God they archived everything, including the equipment used, the diagrams, the whole mess. It's got to be continued.
Well, you know, one of the things, have you ever heard of a book, it's called Voices of Eternity? I can't remember the author.
No.
Okay, it's called Voices of Eternity. And I learned this because I used to hear voices in raindrops on the roof and stuff. I used to hear people call my name and try to talk to me. And little by little, as I studied more and more metaphysics, I learned that that this is people on the other side trying to communicate, and they use static noises of the physical world to do it.
Yes, sir. That makes sense.
Okay.
And is right down the alley of what we're talking about.
Okay.
They were using tones and vibrations at you know, different ones, trying to figure out what could modulate more easily.
Well, you know what would work best is if they find that right frequency that'll make a fairly clear voice. But the important thing is, someone like me, I don't understand speech unless it's very clear. Okay, I speak very clear myself on average. I'm tired tonight, but unless it's very clear, I can't understand it.
Yes.
But one of the things with today's computers and everything, you can generate that frequency that will give them something to work with to communicate.
You're so correct.
And then you can counteract that frequency,
yes,
and the voice should stand out.
Oh, you're absolutely correct.
And it should be clear.
You're absolutely, well, there might be some problems. In other words, if you if you got rid of the original frequency that, you know, appeared to be masking parts of the voice or making it harder to hear, you would see, since that was a frequency that was modulated, the moment you null that out, you're going to null out the apparent voice as well, because it's using that frequency to modulate.
Yeah, but there's an imprint left behind, especially if you use computers. There's an imprint left behind that can be enhanced.
Well, I have absolute faith that if somebody were to review the work that produced what we heard in the first hour and 20 minutes or so of the show, and use modern technology, which is what you're talking about, computers and so forth, to enhance it, what we would get would be clear, two-way, real-time communication with the dead. That would be awesome. From the high desert in the middle of the night, I'm Art Bell.
Would you pay 15 cents to hear this show in its entirety? That's the daily charge for Streamlink. Sign up at www.coasttocoastam.com. Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222.
To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It's Halloween, or perhaps in your time zone, it's already the Day of the Dead. Either way, welcome. This is Ghost to Ghost, and if you'll stay right where you are, it continues in a moment. Good morning. Here we go. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to finally get a hold of you and be able to talk to you. Also wanted to say your family's always in our prayers.
Thank you. What is your first name?
Dwight. And
Dwight.
We're in Colorado Springs, and we listen to you on KVOR 740.
All right. Excellent. Proceed.
We thank you. And, it's rather strange. It started as a child. I have a twin brother, and my mother had tried to commit suicide, and we were clear at the other end of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's sleeping, and we both got up, went to the door, and saw her in there. And we went out to shake her, and she kind of looked up and looked at both of us and then just dropped her head. And being kids, we didn't know what the hell to do except run in and, you know, hey, Dad, Mom's dead, I think, you know. And that during that period of time, we went to family and friends, and that night we came back home, and we're laying there in bed, and I'm looking in the hallway. I mean, I just couldn't sleep, and I seen the head of my mother, nothing below the neck, just the head.
Hmm.
And it comes right at me, and I didn't even find out until just recently my twin brother saw the same thing.
Really? That's like the third story like this tonight. You both saw the same thing.
The same thing. And what was funny is because it was proportional to what the head size would be in the hallway.
Right.
And it would come towards you and get bigger and bigger until it just like encompassed you and went right past you. And then other times, in her house, or her mother's house, I would be, as a kid, be looking across the street, and I wouldn't call it shadow people because I don't know what to call it. It's just a feeling you get from looking at a certain area.
Yes.
And I would go through the kitchen, and there's this little face of a sailor boy. It's a like a ceramic piece. And every time you looked at it, it was almost like it was somebody. And just the other night, I was just sitting here going through the, Coast to Coast website.
Yes.
And I just felt this real hard nudge on my shoulder. And I thought it was my wife. And I just looked up like she was right there, and there wasn't nothing there.
I understand. Well, all right. You see, all of this seems to go. He happened to be on the website, which means he was on a computer. And more now, we're associating the paranormal with a different vibrational state. We've talked about this a few times on the program. When you're sitting at a computer, you're receiving a certain frequency, you know, 60 hertz, 70 hertz, 80 hertz, whatever. You've got your computer refresh rate set at, and that's slowly beginning to affect your brain and allowing you to function at a slightly different vibrational rate. So I think in the computer age, the modern age, we're going to begin to see more and more of that which we could not previously see for exactly that reason. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got a story, and I'd like to follow it up with a question, if I may.
Sure.
My story, I work second shift, and I got an emergency phone call at work, and it was my wife, and she wanted me to come home right away. And, of course, I did. And when I got home, she was in bed, and she was trembling. I mean, just uncontrollably trembling.
Yes, sir.
And when I asked her what was wrong, she said that evening she went to take a bath like she usually does, and she felt two hands, grab her shoulders and shove her under the water and held her under
The
bathtub.
Oh, my God.
And she gasped for air. They, whatever it was, let her up. And, of course, she was terrified.
But whatever it was trying to kill her.
Right. Either that or give her a stern warning or something. I don't know what it was.
Either way.
And she has had episodes like that since then, and that was 5 years ago. She claims to have been raped by something and just all kinds of stuff.
Well, as you listen to some of the other women who have called, sir, I think you'll find that's very common. Not very common if you don't bring it up, if you don't ask, but once, you know, somebody realizes that others are experiencing the same thing, then they're very likely to want to tell their story. So you've already heard quite a bit like that. Actually, it's already been a very revealing evening. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Jed from outside of Buffalo.
Yes, sir.
I was just calling to share a story with you.
Fire away.
When I was younger, me and my brothers, we used to hear a lot of noises and stuff in our house.
Yeah.
And at one time, for some reason, we just decided that we were going to, like, make fun of them and stuff. And,
mm-hmm.
We made fun of, like, I don't know, like, I can't really explain it. But my one brother got kind of out of hand. And, the next day, he got, like, really sick. And, I don't know, we were all downstairs, like, me, my other brother, and my mother. And he was upstairs sick. And then we heard screaming from the room.
Yes.
And, well, we all went up there, and my mom grabbed my brother. He was screaming, and she grabbed him, and she was holding him. And I just remember he was really, really red and sweating, and he was like mumbling incoherently, and he was, I don't know. And then I just remember him saying, like, "They're coming through the walls. They're coming through the walls." And like his eyes were darting all around, and like we didn't know what to do about it. So. I don't know. That's just what I wanted to share.
Oh, well, you shared it. I would have called 911. That sounded that serious. You could put that off, I suppose, to fevered delirium from the illness, or you could discard the whole story if you wanted to. But it is the second such story. You'll recall the finger right through the boot and then the blood poisoning and death. So maybe it's better, on the other hand, to play it safe and not make fun of such things. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, this is Chris from Santa Rosa, listening to you on KSRO 1350.
Hey, Chris.
So I've got these story. I have a story about being attacked by entities with, sexual purposes in mind.
Okay.
What happened, I was sleeping one night, and I woke up with the feeling of a pressure laying over me. And I woke up, and I saw the most hideous creature sitting astride of me, and it paralyzed me for a second. And then I just started thrashing at it with my arms.
All right, you used the words hideous creature, which implies to me that you saw clearly something.
All right, full on visual of it.
All right, so what was it you saw?
It seemed to be a mixture of all different types of animals, a long, toothy beak and dark fur claws. Eyes that just had some sort of weird movement. But I swung at it,
uh-huh.
And I jerked up into a sitting position. I'd been lying on my back.
Right.
And it moved off. And the room was dark, but I could see that it was still there because, you know, as it moved away, it was darker than the surrounding darkness. And it stopped. And I stopped, and, you know, I was just there. I was in shock, and I was looking at it. And then it moved back at me and attacked me again. And I had learned from a few friends to cover my navel and cover my genitals, and so I did.
Right.
And it moved away. And I couldn't sleep that night. And the very next night,
I would think maybe many nights. What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think you encountered or came?
Well, I know what it was. You have experience like that, and you start getting into the books, and you start looking at what's going on.
Yes.
And it was what they call for a male, it's a succubus or a succubi, and for
yes.
a woman, it's an incubi.
Right.
And what they do is they come at you, and they will use your sexual energy or your kundalini force,
mm-hmm.
which comes out in your sexual energy, as a food, as a some sort of an energizing sustenance for them.
Feeding on your energy, yes. Mm-hmm. Pretty common. So what do you think? Did you get the sense he was making that up? I didn't. Nor have I would speak of it so far. Most of the rest of the people, not making it up. These things really are happening around us. And maybe they're becoming more frequent. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Tim calling from Mexico.
Mexico? What part of Mexico?
New Mexicali.
Okay. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Well, my story basically is I guess, kind of unique, though, because the first time I heard Ghost to Ghost was last year, and I sent you a fastball saying that I'll never listen to Ghost to Ghost again. I broke my promise. I listened to today. Well, the reason why is because I was on my way to the gym. The gym's open 24 hours, 7 days a week, blah, blah, blah. And I wanted to work out.
Uh-huh.
But on that day, it started to drizzle because there was a fire up in the foothills. And Coast did that mass consciousness. And I said, oh, it works. So as I was driving through these series of hills going up and down, I was driving like 45, 50 miles an hour. Keep in mind it was raining. And as I was coming down the hill, I was just driving and cruising. I was like, what the heck is that? There was this purple substance on the bottom of the hill.
Oh.
And it started to come forward. And I'm like, oh, my God.
You mean like a blob of?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it started to, and it shot towards me. I'm like, whoa. And I stomped on the brakes. And it just passed through me and over my head. It was stupid me. I forgot that it was raining. The brakes locked up. So I started to pump the brakes. And after pumping the brakes, I pulled over to the right. And I came like within feet, like 2 or 3 feet from a police car.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Just in shock. Police officer walks out of the car. Looks at me and said, are you okay?
Uh-huh.
I said, yes. And he said, did you see what I thought? Did you see what I see? And I said, no, because I thought he would, like, take me to a rubber room or have me arrested for being under the influence. And I go, no, officer. And he heard the radio on. He goes, ooh, Ghost to Ghost, huh? And I go, huh? He goes,
really?
Go, yeah. And I said, oh, yeah, Heart Bell, yeah, yeah. And he goes, well, just be careful, drive slowly. And then he walked away, and then he makes a U-turn. And I was in shock because that was the first time I saw a ghost. And as I looked up, he passed by me, and about 2 seconds later, I looked up, looked in my rearview mirror, and I said, what the heck? I got out of the car, looked up the hill, no police car.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. I'll tell you something. I've had a lot of communication from law enforcement. And you would expect that, wouldn't you, in this business, this ghost business? I mean, they're on duty frequently second and third shifts, you know, the graveyard shift, right? And they see things. A large percentage of them see things. And they won't talk about it generally until they're retired, but they do indeed see things. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, this is Tammy from Sedalia, Missouri.
Welcome.
I have a story I would like to share with all of your listeners. And
please.
It's true, and it's very terrifying for me to even talk about it.
Okay.
In 1967, shortly after my father died, I was 9 years old. And my siblings were older, of course, and my mother was in the home. And my older sister that was married, she would come back and spend the night with us now and then. Her husband was at work. Well, while my dad was in the process of dying, he was constantly laying in the bathtub with hot water on his legs because it just you know, the bone cancer was just killing him, and he
yes.
was constantly laying in this hot water. And, you know, my mom would have him back to his room. Well, he finally passed away. It was just about this time of year, in fact. And 2 weeks after his funeral, my mother and her friend was eating lunch in our kitchen, and the hot water went on in our bathroom. And it just scared her to death because she had to turn the water all the way back.
Got
and
it.
Steam had already come out. Well, this had happened to each one in my family, and we'd seen it all, you know, together at different times. We hired a plumber to come out to our house. He put all new plumbing in. This continued to happen.
Kept happening. Wow.
It kept happening. And we couldn't think, why would our father scare us like this? I don't know if another type of a demon or entity had entered our home to make us think that, you know, our father was kind of haunting us.
No, ma'am, I believe you, and I believe it was your father. But what it says about death, I find very discomforting. Just the way,
yeah.
just the way last night and tonight, these EVPs, most of them I find very discomforting because it just doesn't fit the idea that most Christians have of dying and the other side and heaven and hell
oh,
and the way it's supposed to be. It just doesn't fit.
I know it. And, you know, the fact is this wasn't, you know, a physical strikeout, but emotionally it wrecked my childhood. And I have grown up, and I have went through lots of counseling over this.
Yes.
Because, you know, there was no way in a nine-year-old's mind you could conceive what you were seeing and going through, you know, because it just horrified me. And we ended up selling our house and moving.
I understand. Hopefully it did not follow you.
It never did follow us. But, you know, my sister lives two houses from that same house. And, you know, even when I go by there now at my age, I've got kids of my own. I can still feel a funny feeling when I just drive right by my house where I was raised.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good night. No, she wasn't making that up, was she? You see, these things do happen, and so far, most of them that I have reviewed, and I've carefully studied this EVP, very carefully, with my guests, with what I played for you earlier tonight, and what's said is very disturbing, and the voices, the young voices of those saying it, is very disturbing. And the whole thing, in the context that you've heard it, including the story that young lady just told us, is disturbing. What does it mean about the nature of death if, in fact, you're not off to heaven or some other place, but just another dimension where what you're able to do is quite limited and quite like what you did on Earth. In fact, so similar as to, well, I don't see much difference. Do you, if that hot water kept coming on? That man had bone cancer in his legs. He used the hot water to try and comfort himself. And then after he died, he kept doing it. What does that say about the nature of the other side? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Sandy. I live in Juneau, Alaska.
Hi, Sandy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I've been listening to you for the last few weeks, and I didn't realize you were even on the air, and it's just been a great place to listen.
Thank you. It's something a little different. Right now, I suspect all over the dial, bottom to top, it's nothing but election, election, election.
Right.
So we're sort of an oasis in the night.
Right. Well, I have a ghost story to share, and I, quite frankly, have been so terrified of it that I've not even told anyone about it.
That's pretty common, Sandy.
Is it?
until you begin to hear others' stories, you just don't say anything. Listen, Sandy, we're coming up on a break, and so what I want to do, you're on our toll-free line, so it's Aaron Nickel. And I'll hold you over, all right?
Very well.
All right, stay right there. That's Sandy on the West of the Rockies line. So, this is what we're doing tonight. It's called Ghost to Ghost AM. It's one night I really don't fool with. I just sort of let people lay it out the way it was, the way it really happened. And it's up to you to listen and decide what it all means. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
start to burn. And the warnings on them beer cans gonna be buried in them landfills. No deposit, no sad songs, and no return. Yeah, it's only gonna take about a minute or so till the factories blot the sun out, and you're gonna have to turn your lights on just to see. And then the lights are gonna be neon, saying, fly our jet to paradise, and the whole damn world's gonna be made of styrene.
Listen, well, my brothers, when you hear the night wind sigh, and you see the wagons flying through the gray polluted sky, there won't be no country music, there won't be no rock and roll, cause when they take away our country, they'll take away our soul.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good evening. Earlier you heard the voices of the dead. You really did. And now you're hearing stories about the dead. The whole thing is very disturbing.
No two ways about it.
But that's what it's all about on this night. Not all of them are Casper, you know. And that's really what we're talking about. Those, well, we're talking about entity attacks. And you'll notice there's no shortage of reporters on the subject. Now, what that says to me is that, indeed, not all of them, or even most of them, are Casper and friendly at all. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I was working in Germany in 1980, and I worked there for a year, and I had an apartment on a caserne, which is a military for the U.S. government.
Yes.
And my apartment was in an old barracks that had been used for the SS. It used to be an SS barracks.
Right.
And I had a really nice apartment. It was one bedroom, and I moved in, and I was single. Immediately, I started having very sexy, sensual dreams with a man who was dressed with boots. He had those really high boots, and he had like a white pirate shirt on.
Really?
And there was a woman in the background, and we would have sex practically every night. And I just thought, wow, I must be very lonely. I never woke up from them, but I had these.
No, you're a million miles from being alone. This is actually quite common.
And then my girlfriend came over like a month later to live with me, and she got a job. And she woke up the first night there screaming because she saw him standing in her doorway. And he tried to have sex with her, and she wanted nothing to do with it.
We've had, like, multiple witnesses now, several calls tonight with multiple witnesses, and here's another one. So she wouldn't have a thing to do with it, huh?
No, and then my mother came to visit, and the first morning my mother, I was 32, my mother was 56, and the first morning she got up and she said, well, I must be missing your father very much because I had this dream last.
Well, by the time your mom got there, didn't you feel somewhat incumbent on your part to warn people?
I didn't even think of warning her. I mean, I was just so excited about having her there. It never dawned on me. And so I told, then of course, my girlfriend, Joan, and my mom, and we sat there, and we all compared stories, and he looked the same, and the woman was in the, I don't know what her job was, maybe just to stand and watch, But it was the strangest thing. But when I did leave, I did tell the woman who, and it was a woman who got the apartment, I told her
good,
about it.
Good for you. At least you warned somebody.
I had to warn her. I stayed. I only stayed there a year, but and there was nothing I could do about it. You know, I couldn't keep him away. I couldn't figure out how to do it. Once we figured out what it was, and it was a creepy building anyway. I mean, it had like four levels down below, and.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard strange things, and that was where the laundry room was, and you didn't want to do laundry at night, so.
Well, it was obviously the place. I mean, these others had not been having previous experiences until.
No, none of us had.
That's right. Alright, well listen, thank you very much. There you have it again. And why wouldn't sex be a part of it? It is a central part of all human beings' lives, right? And a large driving emotional physical force that is in all of our lives, right? So it makes sense. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Following with your topic here, I just wanted to share a story that happened to me back in 1996.
Where are you, actually?
Oh,
now?
I'm Robert, and I'm in Pennsylvania.
Okay, Rob.
And I had just gone to Dubuque, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
With some friends. We were working on the 96 presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of a few days, I heard all of these people talking about a guy named George. And they didn't really clue me in the beginning, but I figured out that George was a ghost that lived in one of the people's homes. And apparently George followed them around and rode around in the car. And sometimes they could see George and sometimes they couldn't. And they talked about this consistently.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised a very fundamental Christian. I didn't believe such things were possible. I still retain my beliefs, except on this particular subject. And I just felt compelled to tell them that, you know, stuff like that can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I mocked them, and I did it pretty much in an arrogant, not nice way.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't believe them at all. And then one night, we were doing some election work, and they ran out for pizza. And I was watching some news station, and there was a stack of papers that we had near the entertainment center. And they started to, I can't even explain what happened. It sounds like it's out of Ghostbusters, but these papers raised up on the side, and they started flying around and swirling and going, and I thought it was a joke. I thought, you know, there's candid camera around here. These people are playing a joke on me. And
mm-hmm.
and I don't remember exactly what I said, but I said something to the effect of, you know, stop playing around, guys, or what kind of joke. And the
where is Alan Funt?
Yeah, right, exactly. I was looking for him, or his son, Peter.
Yeah.
And they started flying at me. I mean, the papers were, like, swirling around me in a tornado kind of effect, and I was batting them down, and I was terrified. And I just remember saying that the one thing I do remember saying very clearly is, okay, George, I believe.
Oh, really?
As soon as I said that, the papers stopped, and I was breathing heavy, and I was horrified.
Well, you're
horrified.
Only about the fourth caller this morning who got his or her experience from mocking the
yeah.
whole thing.
And, you know, so something else, and I don't know if you've ever heard of this happening, and I've never related this to any kind of spiritual experience or ghost experience, but I've had a problem for probably close to 10 years, and it comes and goes, and sometimes it's every night, and sometimes it doesn't happen for over a year, usually it's very early in the morning, where I wake up, and I feel like my mind is completely and totally awake. I can't move anything.
Mm-hmm.
I can't move my hands. And the first time, sometimes I feel like I'm going to die.
Well, there is...
Is that terrifying?
Of course. There is a condition, of course, called sleep paralysis. And that may not be ghostly at all. However, at the same time, we do seem to get an awful lot of stories that begin that way, don't we? There is a certain diagnosed medical condition of sleep paralysis that does occur. Of course, the rest of this doesn't go with it. Usually, east of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Fran.
Hi, Fran.
Miss Art?
Yes.
Oh, okay. In 1955, I was 18 years old, and my father died. He was only 50.
Uh-huh.
And those days, you could have the viewing or the wake, as we called it, at the house if you had a big enough house.
Sure.
So he was laid out at the house, and for 3 days there were people coming and going and coming and going. So finally it was over with, and about 2 weeks later my sister and I were going down the street, and this Italian couple, we lived in an Italian neighborhood, we were Italian too, and Tony called me over. And a lot of the Italians had a nickname for me because I had red hair, so they called me Cavarush, which means red cabbage. So the older guys always called me that. So he said, Cavarush, come over here. So we went over, and he said, are you mad at me? And I said, no, why would I be mad at you? And he said, well, you know, he said, we went to the wake, but he said our son wouldn't go. His son was about in his 30s or 40s, and I said, I wouldn't have known if the president showed up. I said, I was too distraught. And I said, besides, I wouldn't be mad about something like that. And he says to me, well, you know, I'm going to be next. Will you promise me that you'll come to the wake? And I said, Tony, will you stop it? And his wife is trying to shoo-shoo him. And he says, no, please, promise me you'll come. I said, okay, I'll come to it. So we left. And as I was leaving, he said, hey, Kevarush, he said, I promise you that I will give you a sign that I know you're there. So I just waved him off, and we left. Well, 2 months later, Tony died. So my sister and I went down the street, went in the house, and there were a lot of people around, so we had to wait before we could go to the casket and, you know, say our prayers. And so I was glancing up at the flowers. There were lots of flowers, and there was a beautiful spray of yellow flowers, and it had, like, worked into a clock, which gave the time of day that Tony died.
Right.
I had never seen one like that. I had since seen a lot of them. So I said to my sister, look at that. He died at exactly 10:20, and that's the time Dad died. And she said, wow. So we finally got up to the casket, and I went to kneel, and just as I went to kneel, I felt something strange was going to happen. And just then, the spray of flowers with the clock fell off the wall, hit the casket, hit our feet because we tried to jump back, and the undertaker happened to be there delivering chairs, so he came running over, and he says, oh, he said, I'm so sorry, are you hurt? I said, no, we're okay. And he said, that's never happened before. He said, I guess I'm going to have to put it back up. Well, we left, and my sister turned to me, and she said, because I forgot all about what Tony said to me, and she said, do you remember what Tony said to you? That if you showed up, he'd give you a sign.
Yes.
So I don't believe in coincidences. That's never happened before. The flowers looked like they were up there pretty good. And so I think that
that was Tony's sign. Oh, no. I think that was Tony's sign, all right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But again, I'm not so sure how comfortable it makes me feel with the nature of what we've been learning about death.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, sure is.
I listen to your program all the time, and I have a lot of questions going through my mind that I never had before, because, like you said, well, we were Catholics, so we believed you die, you go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But so many things have happened to me that, you know, I know that there's an afterlife, but I think that Tony was determined to let me know.
Tony did. Thank you very much for the call. Well, yes, so much disturbing about, it's so contrary to what most of us believe about the nature of death, right? We've got the, I don't know, maybe you can throw in purgatory some, and then heaven, and then you got hell, and you've got all that stuff, but none of what we've been hearing, none, from the electronic voice phenomena, to the stories, to any of the rest of it, would suggest that that's what it is. Not to me, anyway. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What is your first name?
I'm Sandy.
Sandy. All right. Where are you, Sandy?
Juneau, Alaska.
Juneau, Alaska.
Has
it begun to get cold up there yet?
Well, we've had a couple of real hard frosts, 20 degrees at night.
Oh, well, that's cold.
But right now it's around in the 50s. So, and we have a lot of rain. You know, we're a rainforest.
Oh, I know. I know. Most people think Alaska's all igloos. Well, Juneau's, you know, way down there.
Yeah.
The capital and all that.
And it's right on the ocean, and we get a lot of warm currents.
People don't know that your town is accessible only by air or sea. I mean, that's it, right?
That's correct. They keep saying they're thinking about building a road, but it would be a very expensive project.
Yes, it would. So Juneau is a very isolated town.
Yes.
Anyway, what's your story?
Well, this occurred about 20 years ago. I was going through a really bad divorce. There was a lot of violence in the marriage and stuff. And the doctor had given me some medication to help me sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was lying in bed, and I was lying on my stomach, and all of a sudden, I felt a very heavy pressure sit on the side of the bed right next to me. And I tried to get up I was concerned that it was my soon-to-be ex-husband maybe sitting next to me or whatever.
Sure.
But I was trying to turn around to see, but I couldn't. And all of a sudden, I heard this. It was like a woman's laugh, and like a woman who was a really heavy smoker.
Uh-huh.
And she laughed.
A raspy laugh.
Yes. Very, very gravelly sounding,
yes,
is what I call it. And I tried to sit up again, and it was like she flung herself backwards on top of me. And it was just laughing and laughing. So I tried to reach my arm around, and I grabbed the hair on the head, and I pulled it, and the head came off.
Oh, my God.
And so I'm holding it by the hair, and I look at it, and it's just a real wrinkly old face.
Most people would be inclined to drop it like a hot potato.
Well, I fainted, actually. But it started. It woke up while it was in my hand, and that's when I fainted.
What? Say what? It woke up in your hand.
And so then I came to. My dog was whimpering and sniffing at me.
Well, hey, I'm with you. I'd faint too. I'd faint dead out.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And when I woke up, there were a few strands of hair in my hand.
Oh, my God.
And so for a minute there, I wanted to throw them away, to just throw them out and get rid of it right away.
At the very least.
But I thought, I'm going to put them on the nightstand. And so I did, and I sat up in bed for a long, long time. Finally, the dog fell asleep, and she seemed pretty calm. And so I went back to sleep, fortunately. And so I woke up in the next morning, and I remembered what had happened, and I looked over to the dresser where I'd put the hairs,
yes,
and they were gone. But I was so very terrified.
Oh, my God. Well, that qualifies as one of the worst I've heard. Thank you very much. Take care. Oh, now that's bad. That's really bad. You grab at a ghost's hair, and you grab it by the hair, and the head comes off in your hand. And then the head wakes up, and then our caller faints. And I don't blame our caller a bit. Good morning. You're on the air, Ghost to Ghost AM with Art Bell. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello. Hi. Where are you, sir?
Well, I'm traveling. I'm just east of St. Louis, traveling to Iowa.
Okay.
I have a good story here. I got plenty of stories, but my bizarre story is when I was 18 years old, back in 1990, I was a whole bunch of my buddies, and we got a house rented right out of high school, and had a lot of fun, and one night, my buddy and I were staying up late and talking about stories and drinking a little bit, and he decided to spend the night, so I had the biggest room in the house, and I had a couch in there.
Uh-huh.
So he decided to sleep on the couch. Well, I went to sleep. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and some odd reason, I woke up at 6 a.m., and there he was, elbows on the knees, and why is the ghost? And I said, hey, what's on there, bud? He says, you need to take me home, and you need to take me home now. So I took him home, and later that day, he gives me a call, and he goes, you need to come over. I need to tell you a story.
Mm-hmm.
So that night, I went over to his house, and he says, you went to sleep. Well, I didn't go to sleep at all. I go, well, what happened? He goes, well, I was laying there, my face was facing the couch, and he says, I heard this woman's voice saying, I can't sleep. And he's like, what the heck? So he turns around, and there's this lady standing there, and she goes, I can't sleep. She's looking right at him. And reality hits him, and he's like, whoa. And he jumps back, and she jumps back, and she flies out of the room. And he realizes there was no legs. And he was awake for until I woke up.
Did you say no legs?
Yeah. She like floated away.
Just floated out of the room?
Out of the room.
Or through something? To
out of the door. Door was open. She went out the door.
Got it.
And what makes the story even more bizarre is the fact when he was telling me the story, I was kind of like, okay, whatever. He says, I was telling my dad about this story. And he says, what house was that? And he explained to where that house was at. He goes, well, his dad used to be a cop. Mm-hmm. My rookie year as a cop, I got a call in that house. And a lady was shot in that house and killed through the window, that front window there in the house.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this activity seems to circle around those who died, how should I put it, unexpectedly. I guess we all, most of us die unexpectedly, but in a violent way, suicides seem to linger. There's more to this world we live in, than is apparent on the surface. And if tonight's program doesn't prove that, I don't know what does. From the high desert in the darkness, this is Coast to Coast AM on Halloween, or is it now the Day of the Dead?
Code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and all of you, of course, what we're talking about tonight with you are entity attack stories. That is to say, people have actually been attacked by some sort of entity. And we've heard plenty of them, that's for sure. More straight ahead. This evening's program was designed to get you thinking, and I would presume it's probably done that. By the way, if you saw my webcam photo, Richard in Oregon, Wisconsin says, "Hey, Art, nice hat you're wearing in your webcam. You can never underestimate the power of the cylindrical pyramid." First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, my name's Jason. I'm calling from Ark City, Kansas. Listen to you on 98.7 KFH.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
Just tonight I was taking my kids trick-or-treating, and I remember this story my friend told me quite some time ago. I walked by this same area tonight. It's a house that's been bulldozed here in town. It's part of the college now that's here in town. I was walking by it one time when I was about 13 or 14 years old with my friend Ron.
Yes.
And he was telling me about living in that house when he was younger. And he was laying in his bed one night watching TV. And straight out from the wall came a little boy and his dog. And it was obviously a ghost. He said it was opaque and had red eyes. And it was just very scary to him. And he pulled the covers up over his head. And he felt the breath of this little kid, you know, bending over and looking at him.
Aye, aye, aye.
And so he, you know, he told me this story, and we were walking by the house. And right about that time, I said, you know what, I don't believe ghosts anyway. And my feet came straight up out from underneath me. I fell flat on my face.
Yes.
And it was like a magnet had latched onto my heels and pulled me straight down. It was one of the craziest experiences I think I've ever had.
This, sir, is a recurring theme tonight. Those who mock seem to, well, not make out too well.
It seems to be that way, definitely.
Doesn't it? All right. Thank you very, very much for the call. Apparently, you can be skeptical and safe, but if you move and cross over the line into mocking, well, you've been listening, right? Yeah. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello there, Art. How you doing?
I'm fine. What is your first name?
My first name is Clint.
Clint. Okay, Clint. What's up?
All right. Okay. Well, here's my story. I haven't told it for a long time, so let's see if I can remember it. This happened to me back in high school. I'm 35 now, so it's been a while. But as I got older and I realized that more people probably wouldn't believe me, I stopped telling it. So in high school, I had some friends that lived out of town. We lived in a small town in northern Canada. And I had some friends, and their father was a guide, and he would go out in the woods and hunt for animals with you know, people that came into town or whatever. And he was out of town, so we were staying with my friends. And we were going into town to pick up some groceries and whatnot one late night. And as we were driving, I started feeling really panicky and really nervous. So I said, can you stop the car for a second? I think I'm having a panic attack or something. And I've never had one before, so I didn't know what was wrong.
Right.
So we pulled over, and I get out, and I, you know, I was outside. So I thought I'd do what guys do when they're outside of the car, you know, at night.
Yes.
And the car started to move. So I knew that somebody was moving around inside of the car. So I went up, and one of the guys, his name was Kevin, he was getting into the driver's seat, and he's like 14 or 15 years old at the time.
Uh-huh.
And it was winter, it was snow, and I said, you know, I don't want to go back if you're driving. I just, because I have this weird feeling, maybe that's what I was worried about, was a car accident or something.
Yes.
So he goes, well, we're going to go back to the house, grab some money, because they had forgotten some money, and we'll come back and pick you up on the way back, because I said I just walked. So I said, okay. So anyways, they take off, and I'm just kind of walking, and I'm still feeling kind of nervous, but I'm okay. And there's houses here and there, but it's on the woods, so they're far apart. You can see the lights
yes.
in the snow. And all of a sudden, I see the headlights turn around. The car's way up around the lake, and the car's turning back, coming. It's about a mile away. So I thought, I'm going to play a joke on them, and I'm going to run up on the side of the hill in the snow. They'll go by. They won't see me, and they'll think, where did Clint go?
Right.
So I ran up. I'm standing on the side of the road, and I got my hands on my knees, and I'm kind of giggling. And all of a sudden, I don't know if this is related or not, but my vision went blurry, and as the car went by, I thought I saw a hearse driving by. And I thought, okay, that was supposed to be them, but that was a big black car.
Yes.
And then I heard somebody say my name from behind me. They went, Clint, really quietly like that.
Yes.
So I stood up, and I ran down this little hill out onto the road, and I was standing there, and I was really scared, and I was 17, 16, 17. I started to cry because I was, you know, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to run because I couldn't see anything. And suddenly I saw two white figures. And I thought maybe it was a stop sign or something because they were just standing there and they were white in the distance. Then they started moving and coming towards me and they were yelling my name.
Yes.
So I knew then which way to run. So I ran the other way towards the city. And I ran and I ran, and it was about half a mile from the city actually at this point. So I got to the city. At the very edge of the town was a skating rink. And my friends were in the car going around in circles yelling my name. So I ran up and I jumped in the car and I said, go, go, go. And so they just started driving quickly down the road, and I told them what I had seen, and I thought maybe it was them yelling my name that I had heard, but it was different in my head. And I said, why did you guys turn around and come back? And they were looking scared at this point, and they said, well, we were driving, and suddenly they turned and looked at each other and said, do you feel that? And he said, yeah, Clint's in trouble. So they turned their car around to come back and get me.
Huh. Wow.
That's my...
Yeah, that's a good one. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi there. This is my first time calling, so I'm a little bit nervous.
Oh, that's all right. Relax, take a deep breath, and fire away. What is your first name?
My name's Chet.
Okay.
And I'm calling from Virginia.
Yes, sir.
And this happened approximately, happened in the year 2000 in August. And it was one night I went to bed, and it was sweltery Virginia summer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden the room got really, really, really cold. I was lying in bed. And some of your other callers noted a paralysis. Well, I felt a total paralysis, total fear, you know, straight through me. And the bed started shaking.
Huh, just like in the movies, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't violent. I mean, it wasn't picking up or anything, but it was shaking. It woke me up.
Good enough.
Yes, I opened my eyes, and I turned to the side, and I saw a little girl. She must have been like 8 or 9, blonde hair, and looked into her eyes, and her eyes were empty.
Empty?
Yeah, empty. You know how people have emotions in their eyes and whatnot?
Yes, of course, yes. You can see you can see life in eyes, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this girl was smiling, but her eyes were empty.
I've got it.
Well, at that time, I closed my eyes, and I started praying, and everything stopped. And, I mean, I thought nobody was going to believe me. But I thought, you know, I was all shook up. So later that day, I went to go tell my mom. And my mom says, oh, so it's happened to you. I said, what? She said, yes, both me and your grandmother have had the same thing happen.
Huh.
Well, it turns out, you know, my mom's side was very religious, where my dad's side wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got married about a year and a half later, and my wife, she said the same thing happened to her.
Well, all right, there you are. Again, ladies and gentlemen, multiple persons either affected by the same event or witness to them. There's been a lot of that tonight. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Hi, my name is Richard. I listen to KFYI 550 in Phoenix.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, beautiful program. Subscribe to the newsletter and everything. I've got lots of experiences with ghosts. Probably too much to talk about on the radio.
All right, just give me your best one.
Okay. One time I was visiting, I was with friends with Beijing, in Beijing, China.
Yes.
And I was in my hotel room, the Hua Bei Hotel, to be exact. And while I was in there, I was taking a shower. The AC was on inside the place very low. But you could see some steam in the shower. But what happened was a knock on my door inside the shower, well, on the outside the bathroom. The door pushed open. And it got super cold in the bathroom. And I'm standing in the hot water of the shower. And a gigantic plume comes into the bathroom, blows open the shower curtain. I knew right there what it was. I knew definitely was an entity, and it felt like it maybe even might have been a warrior, an old Chinese warrior from way back. And then I put a whole bunch of those red Chinese dream catchers around my room, and it went away after that.
Yeah, I think I would have too. I utilize dream catchers as well.
Yes. I got one more quick experience to try to tell you about. I've had a lot of them at Honolulu Airport. I worked in Hawaii for a while. Even had friends who I worked with been held down out there while working. But there's an instance where I was working in an apartment complex doing security in Hawaii. And I broke the sink, the handle to the sink, when I was on duty on this first night on my post out there. And the handle broke up into a whole bunch of pieces in my hand. And I was walking around that same building later that night. And I could feel something weird already over there, just to begin with. And walking down, I'm looking down on the floor of one of the hallways I'm walking through, and right there, smack dab in the middle of the floor, is a handle, just like the one that fits on that sink that I broke. So I didn't have to make an incident report or write it up or anything. I just put the handle on the sink, and I said, thank you, whoever gave me this.
And went on your way, yeah. Got it. All right, well. I'm not sure what to make of that one. Providence, some kind of providence. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir. What is your first name?
Dimas.
Okay, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, I have two, and they're real quick. The first one, I'm an avid bike rider. I'm in Sun City, California, riding up the hill on my way home. And I, all of a sudden, everything stopped. I don't remember actually falling, but when I did wake in my bed, I was scabbed on my shoulder, and my bike was perfectly put in the backyard where I always put it. And I'm in my house, I'm in the bed, and the door locked, nothing is touched. The only odd thing about it is I had a perfectly round circle on my, my wrist. Everyone always asks me, what is that? What happened? You know, but it isn't consistent with a fall, and it has a little right off the right of the center of it. There's a line in it as though it were something in it. I know it seems odd to say, but that's exactly what's going on. And that, I mean, after it happened, I just forgot about it or whatever. But the more I think about it, it is extremely odd for me to just, as much as I ride a bike, just to fall. I don't remember falling. I don't remember any type of pain. But what is extremely odd is I woke up in my bed on my back. My bike is perfectly where I put it all the time. And then I have this circle as if it was a mark. Something on my wrist.
Pretty weird, all right. I'm not sure what you could attribute that to, though. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Paris calling from New York City.
Yes, Paris.
In 1997, I was up in Warren, Rhode Island, recording an album. I'm a musician.
Yes, sir.
And usually at the end of the day after recording, I would go out running every night. And
sure.
One night, you know, maybe a month into the recording, I went out running, and I would run along this bike path. It would go about five blocks before it got to this wooded area, and the bike path would go down by the ocean,
mm-hmm.
where there were no lights, which was not really a big deal. And I would run; it was about an hour run, and I would do this every night. And when I came to the wooded area, it was pretty foggy, and I tried to run down the path, but something compelled me not to. Like it was definitely fear completely stopping me, and I thought that was ridiculous, and I kept trying to run down the path, and I couldn't do it. I literally was standing there going, this is ridiculous, I'm a grown man.
Huh.
But I actually went back to the studio and just ran around the block a couple of times. Then the very next night, I went to do the same run, and I went down the path. It was no big deal. But on my way back, when I cleared the wooded area and got back into the city, there was this street light that lights up the area right there, and there was this big dumpster. And just as I got to the dumpster, a man ran out from behind the dumpster and ran straight towards me. He was wearing huge boots and a big long trench coat, and he was totally silhouetted. And as he came toward me, he disappeared just as he got to me, and I had like braced myself to fight.
Oh,
and I was like looking on all directions, and he was gone. And I literally ran back to the studio as fast as I can, the four blocks. I ran to the studio and swung the door open, and he was like, What happened? And I was like, I didn't even know what to say because it just seemed so absurd. They all felt like I got into a fight. And I must stress that I was kind of like the skeptic of the band, you know.
And now?
And I'm completely not skeptical at all, but the guy who ran the recording studio looked at me and he goes, was he wearing a long black trench coat and a hat? I said, yes, he was. He said, that was Mr. Colt. I said, Mr. Colt? He goes, everybody sees Mr. Colt around here.
And Mr. Colt is?
He went on to explain that it's the man who created the Colt 45. He had apparently died in Warren, Rhode Island. Later on, when I was back in New York after we made the record, I actually went online and looked him up, and I saw a photograph of him. And even though I only saw him in silhouette, I definitely recognized the form and the jacket and the big coat he was wearing. And that's the story.
Appreciate it, too. Thank you very much. Take
you
care.
Will.
Have a good night. What's left of it? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes. Calling from the Bay Area, San Francisco.
Yes, sir.
I had, when I was growing up, lived in this house that was built in the late 1800s and always felt something or presence around when I was a teenager. Like something where you just kind of glance, look up the stairway and see something.
You know, sir, you know, not very long ago on this program, we had somebody on who said that everybody has the ability to know when they're being stared at. Most everybody has that. If, you know, if you're standing and somebody's
right.
staring at you from behind you where you mm-hmm. cannot see them, you can feel their presence.
Right. Well, we, my mom, kind of a bohemian, late 60s, early 70s, went out, had this artist as a boyfriend, and he had brought this new painting in and hung it up on the wall. It was a figure, a humanoid figure, kind of chained to some abstract buildings.
Yes.
Well, a lot of things used to started happening around the house. We'd wake up in the morning, all the furniture would be overturned, magazines thrown around. Next night, something else would happen. All the dishes would be out of the cupboard and so on. Well, my mom had a lot of friends in the arts and so on, and she knew this medium. And this medium came in, and several of them tried to contact this ghost that they thought was or entity or something that was causing all the problems. And they wrote on a piece of paper, they all held a pencil by the eraser and by this medium asked questions. Well, they asked what it was upset, and it said one word wrote across the paper, chained, asked what the name was. It wrote Leonard.
Did you say chained?
Chained, yes.
Huh.
And asked what his name was, and it wrote Leonard on the paper, asked how old he was. He said 10. Well, later my mom went to the Historical Society and looked up who built the house, found out that he had a son named Leonard that had died of rheumatoid fever.
Oh, brother.
At the age
of 10. Oh, brother.
So we took the painting out of the house, and nothing ever happened after that.
All right. Well, that's quite enough. Believe me, the show is over. We have got to go. This has been Ghost to Ghost on Halloween. Now the Day of the Dead from the High Desert. Crystal Gale always has just the right words to get us out of here with. It's been a great weekend, and I hope you'll think about what you heard.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride. Filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert.